Welcome back to another episode of the Huxley Morton podcast, the show where each week we speak to pharma company owners and industry leaders sharing their stories of personal and professional growth. We're now on series four of the show, and as you may already be aware, we're on a mission to help clinical researchers from around the world with tips, tricks, and inspiration. So if you could do me a quick favor and please hit that follow or subscribe button, it really does help more than you'll ever know. Once again, Adam Walker is alongside me, so sit back, relax, and we'll take things from here. Today, we are going to be speaking to President and COO, should I say, Jennifer Riley of Safety Partners. Jennifer, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's great to be here, James and Adam. I'm really excited to have a nice conversation with you both.
Likewise. Well, look, I know that we had a few tech issues before we kicked off here today with microphones, but we can all hear you loud and clear now. And look, I've given you a brief introduction there. So President and COO of Safety Partners, which I guess when I hear Safety Partners, I don't necessarily always refer to that as life sciences, pharmaceuticals, biotechnology. So look, in your own words, give us a quick overview as to, who you are and what Safety Partners is all about.
Yeah, so oftentimes when people hear the word safety associated with pharma, they think about drug safety, FDA safety. So that's not the safety that we focus on. We focus on the workers, workplace safety. So when you think about environmental health and safety programs, you think about OSHA compliance, how you have a working environment where the workers come to work at the beginning of the day and leave as healthy as they did at the beginning, and really promoting that culture of workplace safety. Mm-hmm. So we've been in business 30 years, and that's what we focus on. We focus on going into these life science companies and making sure we wrap a safety program around the hazards that they have in their laboratory settings.
Wow, interesting stuff. Now, I guess, look, for me as a recruiter, the common topic that I have with so many job seekers is burnout, stress, overwhelmed, anxiety, all of these things on a daily basis. Mm. So is that encompassed by that safety element as well? Or,
you know, we certainly want to consider the whole person. And I would say in the past few years, we've gotten more involved with the human resources department of the companies that we support, because it is, you're looking at the total worker health and how that interact, you know, how that really makes for a successful working environment. So it's not just protecting them from, you know, the hazards that are present and making sure they're following the right procedures, but, you know, are they overworked? Are they rushing? Are they making mistakes? Are they having accidents because they're overworked, feeling burned out? Mm. So we do want to, you know, meld that in, but it's a smaller piece of what we do.
Sure. Okay. Well, look, interesting. Well, I'm sure I'd like to dig into some of the aspects of what you do in a bit more detail as we go on through the show. But look, before we do that, in typical Huxley Morton podcast fashion, tell us a bit about, I guess, your background, how you got into this space, how you got into the industry. Mm-hmm. Was it something that you planned? There's very few individuals, I guess, like my co-host Adam, who planned to get into this space. How was it for yourself, Jen?
Yeah, I fell into it in the most positive of ways, but I really envisioned myself, you know, loving science, really enjoying biology, imagining myself having a role in more of a clinical setting, you know, whether it was a physician's assistant or nurse practitioner or medical school. Thought I would go down that track, but you know, always went down a science track. When I got out of undergrad, I had applied for some PA programs, physician's assistant programs, and you know, that didn't materialize. And I ended up realizing I need a job. Let me see what I can do in a science setting, and started working at the bench as a researcher.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed that. Was in a small lab. But, you know, soon realized I'm not sure that research is really for me. And I started working. I left that position, went into a startup company. So that kind of vibe of startup biotech company, that entrepreneurial spirit of let's all roll our sleeves up and get things done and
put systems in.
Yeah. Well, I can't say I ever had to do that, but definitely long hours, but I really enjoyed that. I enjoyed the science and realized, you know, I wanted to stay in science and But over time, I realized I enjoyed being a part of the science, but not doing the science. And I didn't want to be at the bench, you know, doing experiments myself. And I wanted a way to focus on the operations of the lab, how we could make it more efficient, but yet still feel like I was connected to supporting the science. And that's really as I took on increasing responsibilities of, from an operations standpoint in laboratory settings, and then really focusing, you know, several job jumps later, focusing on the health and safety aspect.
I see. So at what point then did, I guess, your path into the safety and safety partners come about? Because from what I understand, and when you were introduced to me via Laurie Halloran, it was not, I guess, the traditional routine. And you've kind of not got that. It's not such a linear way as to how it's come about to now being the president and COO of a business.
Yeah, certainly. I never thought this would be my role. It's interesting because I have, you know, college age children and they're trying to figure out what they want to do with their life. And I said, you know, when I was 18, this is not what I thought I'd be doing. But I love my role here. I love the president and operations role and all that it entails. But it certainly, it was not, like you said, it was not a linear path. It was looking at how am I going to balance, you know, family life with what I liked and wanting to still have a professional role and, you know, maybe being able to work part-time at one point. So I had left the role that I had in a startup company. I was planning on taking the summer off, and Denise, the founder and CEO at Safety Partners, heard that I, you know, I had met her at several years earlier at another company. And she said, oh, maybe, you know, you want to consider working for me for the summer. And I have, you know, one day a week, you could come and work for me. And I said, oh, I could maybe do that. And so I had this great summer schedule of working one day a week and being home with two small, you know, children for 4 days a week. And, you know, as time progressed, I realized I really liked to work. And as, you know, the fall came, I just, you know, increasingly added hours to my schedule. And before you know it, I was just about full time in a consulting role, working with a lot of great cool biotech companies and helping develop their workplace safety programs.
Wow. And that certainly escalated then.
Yeah, it did. It, you know, pretty quickly. But I really enjoyed it, and also realized, you know, as Safety Partners was growing, there was a need for more operational support, and just really had a at the right place at the right time with a lot of luck and hard work, I think, opportunities to take on more operational roles. And so, you know, fast forward to today. So,
wow. Well, look, just off air, I mean, I was speaking to Adam about, you know, his daughter is soon to be heading off to university. And I guess it's just one of those times, isn't it? You need some flexibility at times. I guess you wanted that yourself when you were younger and the kids were younger. And now I guess your kids are probably looking up to you and thinking, how on earth do you juggle all of these things? I mean, it's just, yeah, it's crazy to think that that's how it's come about, from going from a consultant through to COO, almost that intrepreneur kind of route, as it may be, which I guess, I don't know, probably not many consultants think about that route. I mean, Adam, you've worked as a consultant for years. Has that ever even been on your mind, sort of thing?
To be honest, it's not particularly on my mind, but often, as you've described, Jennifer, when you show willingness and capability is when people like what they see. And I think as a consultant, if you go in as a consultant, particularly on your terms, you know, you'll always give your best, you'll always deliver. And there does come a time at which sometimes those conversations do happen. And, you know, they happen from time to time for me, James. They've happened recently on a couple of occasions, and actually, yeah, it's not really, once you're a consultant, you commit to it. To my opinion, that's what you are. But, you know, there will never be a situation where you never say never, do you? And quite clearly for you, Jennifer, you know, the role expanded into something that you didn't anticipate. It filled a gap. And certainly it sounds like your family grew with you and, you know, you grew into the role. And that sounds like the ideal opportunity to really make your mark. And it sounds very much like that's what you've done.
Yeah, and certainly, you know, it's being open to the pivot. I think it's being open to continuing to learn what you like to do and what you're good at and the things that you don't really care to do. And being open to that pivot where, you know, I didn't feel I was going to always, you know, be in the same role in the same career. And it's okay to think about that career pivot, if you will. So although scary sometimes, it's important to realize that you want to chase what you really enjoy doing and what you excel at.
No, but I guess I'm just thinking, oh, sorry, go on, Adam.
No, I was going to say, also, you don't quite know how that's going to play out, do you? So right. You go with it, you see how it plays out. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, you know, sometimes you get given an opportunity and it sounds exactly like that's how you mm-hmm. went. Sorry, right. James.
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking, I guess it's... kind of like the Steve Jobs speech about, you know, it's easy to connect the dots looking back. And I guess now looking back, there must be a staggering change in how your day-to-day role at the company looks like. Mm. So give us an overview as to, you know, the one day a week gig that you had in the summer when you first spoke to your the founder and CEO.
Right.
What you were doing then to what you're juggling now.
Right.
That's the bit, because I'm like, you've been there so long. It's like it's chalk and cheese. It's worlds apart. Yeah. So
yeah, no, it's true. So, you know, one day a week I was focusing on the one client that I had. I've always had more of a workaholic kind of personality. So it was almost hard to kind of keep it into that one day a week. But, you know, when you're working with these young startup companies, they're eager to get started. You want to do your best for them in a consulting role, but also you want to see them succeed. So, you know, it would be one day a week, sometimes spread out over five, giving them my attention and making sure that I was getting the deliverables ready for them. And at the time it was working on more permits and setting up their laboratory space to be compliant with local regulations, you know, state, federal, and local regulations. And then, you know, the other days I might be at the beach with my kids and, you know, or chasing around two young kids. But, you know, as I started to learn, you know, realize that I really enjoyed that consulting work because it was my first time consulting. I took more clients. So then, you know, it was a couple days a week that I was really focusing on the client work. And then realizing that as we were growing as an organization, we needed more supervisory structure in place. So now I was seeing clients and supervising some junior consultants. And that was really the first step into starting to think more operationally about the company and supporting safety partners.
What was perhaps the biggest challenge that you faced as a consultant to help your clients? And what was the solution provided to them? So, you know, how I'm just trying to picture how it looked then and how you did this in that limited time span where I guess, yeah, one day you'd be in the office, the next day you could be on the beach, which sounds amazing, by the way.
Yeah. Right. Especially here in the Northeast as the warm weather is approaching. But it was really about always just being able to focus on the task at hand, I guess. So being able to focus on the client and the client needs. And so, you know, there wasn't one solution for every client. So, and there never is. And it's really listening to what they need, thinking of solutions of a good, better, best solution and how to roll that out as a suggestion and then implement it. So I think it's really about like being in the moment, dedicating your time in that work time dedicated to the client and then my play time dedicated to my family. So I think just that was like the separation that made it possible.
It just sounds like the way you're describing that you're very good at compartmentalizing actions and outcomes. Mm-hmm. And I think all parents are good project managers. I'm speaking about my wife at this point. She was always a very good project manager before we had children. Since we've had children, she's exactly as you described, you know, take the task in hand, deliver, smash it out the park.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
It's parenting, isn't it? That's what you're right. Describing.
Cool. And look, I guess you know, as things progressed and you took on more and more clients, I guess your responsibilities increased. There was more supervising needed. At what was the turning point where I guess you took on the role as COO? How, you know, what was there a specific discussion? Because, you know, there would have been less days on the beach, I'm guessing, and more days in the office or, you know, the virtual office. So what, how did that discussion go down? Yeah. And what was going through your head at that time? Because as I say, it seems as though, you know, one thing that you, Adam, and I clearly have in common is we like work. And once you get sucked in, great. But I guess also when you're trying to juggle kids and family life at home, there's, I know I have it. It's that kind of internal dilemma of, oh, I want to sometimes do this, but I also need to do this. And everything's, you know, kind of must do it now. And I've got to the point where I just, I'm like, right, I'm setting firm boundaries. That's what I'm doing. Like that, you know, computer's off, etc. And so how did that conversation go with your, yeah, president, founder, CEO?
It really, I think when you're growing a small company, it's, things tend to happen more like from a reactionary standpoint. And so although you want to be proactive in putting staff in place and planning for growth, but, you know, as you start growing and you realize you're adding more clients to your, you know, portfolio of clients that the company is supporting, you know, we were realizing that there was certain needs of the company from an oversight of our clients and from also getting operational systems in place. And so, you know, the way that you were doing it to start and as it was growing organically, you know, there was a need. And so it was really about expressing an interest in, you know, I really think we need to start systematizing this and I'd like to do that. Can I give it a try? And that's how the conversations, you know, continued or began and continued on taking more operational responsibilities. And
it was led by yourself then, really, by the sound of things, rather than, you know, often people get into positions where their boss, their manager, you know, whoever's above them is saying, you know, trying to give them more and more responsibility because they're achieving well. But this was kind of led by yourself, your own drive, your own enthusiasm to get things done and do it better than what was being done previously.
I would say in part, yes, but also in part opportunity. There was others in the role that were also fulfilling some operational tasks that left the company. And so I think with any resignation, it creates opportunity for people that are still at the company to step up, to reconsider their roles and what they, you know, what they want to do. So that certainly was, you know, a key piece of it as well.
Okay. I mean, I'm interested, where did that, I guess, internal drive come from? Because I guess it sounds like you could have been quite comfortable, you know, juggling days at the beach with the kids, with this office work, but clearly you enjoy your work and clearly you took the opportunities that were presented to yourself. And, you know, there's one thing, being in the right place at the right time. You've got to realize that you're in the right place at the right time and actually then act on it, which clearly you have done. So I'm just wondering if there was any mentors that you had at the time or you've looked up to over the years that kind of allowed you to grab that opportunity, because so many people don't, you know, there's so many opportunities out there and we've probably all got friends, families who sometimes drive you crazy when they've got a particular skill or something like that and they don't necessarily do what you want them to do with it. So yeah, where did that come from for yourself, Jen?
Well, certainly, you know, I have a workaholic personality, so that is a piece of it, I'm not going to lie. But I think it's also, whether it's a supervisor that's particularly supportive or someone else in your network ecosystem that, you know, maybe you look to as a mentor and can help validate your own thoughts of, you know, this is what I'm thinking. I'd like to do this. Do you think this would be a good career step? Or, you know, am I going down a point of no return that's too scary? And I think that's, you know, where at one point when I was considering really taking that road to doing more environmental health and safety, you know, that regulatory path mm-hmm. versus staying at the bench and doing bench work. It was reaching out to, you know, trusted mentors and advisors. And do you think I'd be good for this role? Like having that vulnerability to say, this is what I really would like to do, but, you know, what do you think? Mm-hmm. So I definitely, you know, looked to key peers and key mentors. I don't think I can really point to any one particular person. I felt like I used a bunch of people for different things.
I think sometimes you have to, and it's one of those things, isn't it? If you don't ask, you don't get. Mm-hmm. I know that when I used to work for my old boss, and he'll laugh, I was always in his office trying to negotiate better pricing on something, different contracts, pay rises, to the mm-hmm. point where he was just like, will you just leave me alone?
But, just go do work.
But that was me. I was ambitious about it. And in yet, like, I got a lot more than other people did just because I was persistent. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I guess he liked that, really. That's mm-hmm. what he was looking for.
Mm-hmm. Well, you think about that, you know, ambition, but it's also advocacy. It's self-advocacy. And I think that is something that I've learned that's really important. And, you know, that's my key advice to my younger self, is to make sure that you're always advocating for yourself, mm-hmm. And asking the question and asking for the opportunity. So I think, you know, that's really key to getting to that next level, to getting to whether it's a leadership role that you want, or your next job that you want, or, mm-hmm. you know, responsibilities that you want. It's just advocating for yourself.
Amazing.
It's a great point you make there, Jennifer. And as you were describing that life in the lab coat, that really resonated with me, because I realized quite some time ago that I didn't want to be a wet chemist, or whatever you want to call it, a guy in a lab coat. I had a very similar experience, and that drove me down an operational route too. It's quite interesting, because, you know, a lot of our listeners come to all manner of different positions from all sorts of different ways and paths, and what you've described is, I think, very common, actually. You find out what you don't like, but you certainly direct yourself and your energy into what you do enjoy and where you think your drive and motivation can take you. And that's what I, you know, I'm hearing from you loud and clear as you're describing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly, you know, how I felt. I realized I'm really good at doing this, and let me give it a shot and see if I can put my all in, you know, and make it successful. So.
You've got to. Well, it's good to hear how you've reached this point. And look, over the last couple of years, of course, we've had the thing that all of us are bored of speaking about now, which is COVID-19. But look, how are things going at the moment? You know, if you were to give us a snapshot of how that's impacted you as a business, I'm thinking environmental health, safety, etc. It must have... I mean, the workload must have gone up, but look, you share with us.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it certainly was, it created a coiled spring effect. I think, you know, at first when the pandemic hit, we were, you know, all businesses were closing down, laboratories were considered essential. So mm-hmm. our employees were considered essential to get on site at our clients and, you know, continue to promote this healthy environment, and, you know, managing chemicals and hazardous waste was considered essential activities. Mm-hmm. But, you know, people were scared, you know, didn't necessarily feel comfortable going on site at clients. Clients didn't necessarily feel comfortable having us go on site. So it was really navigating that and how we could change our service model a little bit to mm-hmm. do more remote work. You know, whereas we've been conditioned to be on site at our clients in the lab, doing everything, you know, on site, you know, mm-hmm. what were the parts that we could do remotely and still be successful? And so, you know, pivoting to thinking about COVID plans and workplace safety plans related to COVID policies and developing those for our clients. So we're quite busy doing that as well as they were starting to, you know, have their kind of skeleton crew of employees coming back on site. And then as they, you know, fast forward these return to work policies and what that would look like and how they could continue to maintain a safe working environment related to COVID policies. So that
what's been the biggest I guess, bugbearer for people? What's been the biggest challenge or the biggest, I guess, needle in people's sides about getting people either back to labs, back to work on this side of things? What are you seeing on that front?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, labs are really up and running full force now, but it was really, certainly people had to learn to work differently because there was density restrictions of how many people you could have in a laboratory space. So, you know, maybe you used to have 10 people work in that lab and now you could only have 5 people work in that lab. So, you know, that was really that scheduling piece of, are you having, you know, cohorts of people that come on certain days or rotating schedules or morning shifts and afternoon shifts and, mm-hmm. and how to use the space efficiently with the density requirements of having less people in the space just for social distancing. So I think that was definitely a challenge. You know, they couldn't utilize the full space that they had because you needed to maintain this distance. But, you know, certainly the coiled spring effect is that life science continued to become at the forefront of people's minds in research and the need for research and drug development and, you know, the cash that's been invested in new companies. And so for us, we support a lot of new, you know, brand new startup companies. So really just the work for service providers in life science has really grown astronomically over, you know, the past year.
I mean, just following on from that, I've experienced that firsthand as well when I've gone back into a workplace setting and they've implemented PCR testing and all manner of different rules and regulations, you know, simple things like booking out desks and having gaps between desks. And this isn't in a lab environment, but I would imagine there's all sorts of challenges that you've experienced around that in also, dare I say it, you know, perhaps vaccine hesitancy as well, because it's not everyone that wants to have vaccine. But on the flip side, you know, that's been the thing that has ultimately driven the rebuild post-pandemic, hasn't it? I mean, I'd just be curious to hear your perspective on that, if that's not too political a question, dare I say.
Well, you know, I'd say there's certainly less vaccine hesitancy when you're talking about working with life science companies, because that's what they do. They're developing new drugs. They understand the process of, you know, the approval process. So there's truly less hesitancy in that population of people. Yes. So, you know, we had the benefit of having like-minded individuals at our company going on site to these life science companies that, you know, there was really less vaccine hesitancy. So that really didn't present too much of an issue. And actually we found that many of our clients were requiring, you know, vaccination, you know, vaccine status and being up to date on your vaccine. So it was really, they understood and had no hesitancy. So I mean, the need for the vaccine.
You're absolutely right that, you know, the majority, I would say there is a majority of individuals that are for it, but inevitably, you know, where people find rules and regulations, some people push against that. I think we work in a very highly regulated environment where that tends not to be the case, as I think you're describing. And I think, you know, clearly the service you provided has been instrumental in that return to work, but all the continuation of work, dare I say, in you know, in a lab-based setting. So, you know, I think that deserves some significant recognition as well. So.
Well, we were lucky and fortunate and, you know, humbled to be a part of it and to be able to support these companies that are developing, you know, these vaccines and enabling them to continue that development. So.
Amazing. Sorry, I could barely hear you both then. I don't think it's anything with your sound. It is purely the fact that there's a big storm or a load of rain that has just started hitting my office roof here, and I've just had to turn up my sound. But look, in terms of that, Jen, it sounds as though like there's been quite a few adaptations that you've had to go through in order to juggle that. But look, how has the business grown in that period? So, I mean, since you were kind of 1 day a week consultant, how many, I guess, what was the headcount like back then, and how are things now looking?
Yeah. So, when I first joined Safety Partners 15 years ago, we were about 15 employees. And now we're just over 80 employees.
Wow.
So a good 50 plus of those employees are what we call our consulting safety officer. Uh-huh. So they're the EHS, you know, hands-on consultant that's going into these companies. So we've grown significantly over the past 15 years, the time that I've been here.
Wow. And how have you, I guess, kind of managed that? I guess, I'm not sure if you get involved on a day-to-day basis on that side of things, but in terms of attracting the right people, I know that, again, speaking earlier about every candidate that I speak to at the moment, they're all talking about burnout, etc. And that's cited as a reason for leaving. The next thing is culture. Where am I going to be going? What values does that business have?
Right.
So look, I guess, what are the, I guess, the business values that are now coming from yourself as the COO, to an extent, it all filters down. What are the general values that you employ as a business? Because that's a huge change from the headcount then to now.
Right. You know, we realize that you have to put employees first, and that it's not, you know, they're not just a cog in the wheel, and that employees are, especially for us, we're a people business. And so, you know, our biggest asset are our highly skilled consultants. So we need to make sure that we're listening to employees, making changes to their work-life balance, for example, for their burnout factor, and monitoring that. So I think putting employees first, and, you know, first and foremost, is most important. You know, so we as an organization continue to listen to employees, have, you know, surveys, and really focus a lot of our marketing efforts on, you know, the employer branding piece. But it is, you know, the culture that you mentioned and how we create the right culture. And, you know, we want to be, have a, you know, part of our values is, you know, constructive honesty, being respectful, collaborative, ingenuity. These are the types of values that we look for, but in the employees, as well as in our current, you know, current workforce. But it really comes down to attitude, I think. You know, we can teach people all these technical things, but it's how we promote that, you know, positive attitude within the workplace that really helps to build the culture as well. And make people feel connected.
Interesting. I know, I guess I've dropped that one on you a little bit, but I thought that might be the case, just bearing in mind, like, having heard your own story and how you've kind of grown with the business and your own attitude, values, and what's kind of allowed you to work your way up. Just so I'm just interested to how that's changed, because I guess you were once in those shoes, weren't you?
Exactly.
I guess I thought you were going to use the words, you know, treat others how you wish to be treated, but that's precisely what you were kind of saying there. And I guess so that's how the employee, that's how you've grown, that's how the employees are treated. And I guess, look, just hearing me say that probably is maybe a realization of, oh yeah, actually that's exactly what I've done. I've been through the process. I'm now emulating that for those kind of coming through the ranks. But what have you learned about yourself since that time, Jennifer, is what I'd be interested to know.
I think it's since the time of, say, being a consultant to where I am now. I think it's, you know, what I've learned is that you have to allow yourself to be vulnerable and to admit that you don't know something, and to use your network or your, you know, close confidant to get advice from and get direction, and that you don't have to figure things out on your own. Mm-hmm. And so I think that maybe in my younger career days, I would internalize that and feel it was a problem I had to solve on my own and figure it out and work to figure it out on my own. But just the importance of allowing yourself to be vulnerable, admitting that you don't necessarily have the answer, but you have a network of people to help you and get the answer. And I think that is really key for anyone.
Amazing. Well, look, I guess moving forward, what are the plans? I know that as a business, and you've not mentioned it, but I did a little bit of research prior to jumping on. I know that you are female owner led. You know, what are the next plans for expansion, innovation, as things change, because I've already seen certain trends in the market, certainly with some of the biotechs that I deal with. Mm. What's next for you, for safety partners, for, you know, any predictions that you would have for the market in general?
Right. You know, Safety Partners has, you know, for many years and really has focused on Eastern Massachusetts. And so the Kendall Square area, the greater Boston, Cambridge area has been, you know, a successful ecosystem when it comes to life science companies. And so we focused there, but now, you know, for Safety Partners over the past 5 years, we've been increasing our business in New York City. So, you know, we look to continue to grow geographically, mm-hmm. You know, looking at how the life science ecosystem is developing in New York City, and then as well as other areas around the country. So to continue with, you know, being a key ingredient from a national perspective in environmental health and safety programs is a goal of Safety Partners.
Okay, so sticking to what you do best, just on a larger scale, and right. I guess growing that organically by the sounds of mm-hmm. things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Amazing stuff. Well, look, it's been great to get a bit of an overview from your end, and yeah, a quick summary of where you are going next and the plans. But look, before we let you jump off, we always like to end the show with a quick fire questions round.
Okay.
Always a little bit of fun, and it's always good to see, yeah, what marries up with, I guess, what people have said during the rest of the show to what, where their answers come from. And 9 times out of 10, Adam, I would say we could probably pick some of the answers. Do you not think?
I would absolutely concur with you, James. We'll see where you get to, Jennifer.
So ready to be in the hot seat.
It's a pen and paper out and note down my guesses as we go through. But look, this one you actually touched on, and that is, look, what is the one piece of advice you would give to your younger self?
So definitely, you know, not only self-advocacy, but find your mentors, you know, advocate for yourself and build your network. I think those kind of three pieces of advice is what I would make sure my younger self knew.
And have you?
And have I? As my older self, I have, yes.
I just wanted to make sure that you'd done that. So moving on to our next question, what's the number one book or resource you would recommend to our listeners and followers out there? Is there one particular that springs to mind?
Yeah, you know, I have to admit I'm not one of these cover to cover management book readers. I cherry pick chapters, but I do really like Stephen Covey's book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I feel, you know, there's really easily distillable into action. So I'd say that book.
I like that one. And when I read it, I thought I was reading it to better my business skills. I realized that actually much of it from the book I took as parenting skills.
Yeah.
Like Adam said, that project management aspect of being a parent. Mm-hmm.
Just personal relationships and, you know, beyond the, I don't know, career goals. I think it's really translatable.
It's the consistency, definitely. Isn't it? We hear it all the time. It's consistency of performance. It speaks to Atomic Habits as well, James. You know, there are many, many analogous points, I think, from that book to many others that we hear from our interviewees.
I know I touched on it a moment ago about the company growth. But look, you're not necessarily involved with every hire. But when you are building, I guess, your direct team, what are the top three qualities or values that you look for most?
Yeah, I think really it's, I touched on this earlier, it's that attitude versus aptitude. We've become savvy in our hiring practices and look for people that we know technically can be successful in the role, but it's really about the attitude and the soft skills that they bring to the role that, you know, we really look for. Can they communicate well? So, you know, being a good communicator, being organized, are really those key attributes, but it's really about attitude. You know, summing up a bunch of things, 3 things into one, is just about the attitude and how they approach their work is where we find our most successful consultants, is in that attitude piece and ability to build relationships.
Agreed. And I guess I often see debates on LinkedIn about this very subject. And I think, you know, all things being equal, you assume that everyone is going to have the technical ability, or they should do, otherwise they're not going to be there. It's then attitude, communication over everything for me. And often, you know, when I'm introducing applicants for jobs, 90% of my introduction is always about them as a person rather than the piece of paper that is their resume or CV, you know, and what they've done there. So no, I agree with that. And I like that, Jen, good to hear.
Yeah, that's been key.
So moving on, I think you've touched on your family, but dare I ask, is there anything else that's favorite to you outside of work? Do you have any other interests or passions?
Yeah, you know, I love all things. Usually I'm typically a science minded person, but I do have the creativity piece. So I do like all things arts and crafts. I love to, you know, do little paintings and lots of crafting projects. And that's sort of my outside interest in therapy, I guess you could say.
That's not one of yours behind you, is it?
No.
I was going to say, great work if it is.
Yes. I'd have to take another pivot into the art world if that was mine, but no, it's not.
So. Arts and crafts. Certainly a useful skill to have if you have got the kids as well.
Yeah, because right.
You're always, you know, you're always going to be expected to make something. I mean, fortunately, I don't know what I'm going to do when it comes to that bit because I am useless in that area. I'm definitely going to need to develop that skill. But look, to wrap up the show, Jen, finally, what would you say is your number one golden rule for both life and business?
Yeah, I think it's really about listening to people and treating them with respect. You know, truly the golden rule. Treat people how you want to be treated. And just be respectful and a good listener.
Solid advice. And it seems that you're already employing that at Safety Partners. So that is so good to hear. Well, look, it's been a pleasure having you on the show with Adam and I today. I guess, look, for anyone that's looking to reach out to you to hear more about your services, what you're doing, you know, the Massachusetts life science ecosystem that you're involved in, what is the best way to get hold of yourself and Safety Partners as a business?
Yeah, certainly reach out to me on LinkedIn. You know, I'm active on LinkedIn. I'd love to hear from you, as well as through the Safety Partners website. There's an info box that you can also reach out to learn more about Safety Partners and our role and certainly any career interests as well.
Fantastic stuff. Well, look, thanks again for being on the Huxley Morton podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure. I'll let you get off and enjoy your day over in Massachusetts.
Likewise. Well, thank you for having me. It was really fun. It's great, Jennifer, to meet both of you. Okay. Take care.